Welcome to Abide in Liberty, a podcast empowering patriots everywhere to re-enthrone faith, family, and freedom as the bedrock pillars of liberty in education, our communities, and our nation.
All right, everyone, and welcome back for another episode of Abide in Liberty. Last week, we did a little bit more of an in-depth review of the separation of powers, which branches of government are in charge of which things, and how checks and balances kind of stitched, despite the fact that those powers are separated, stitched the different branches of government back together in a way that, number one, forced the branches of government to work together in order to get their job done, and number two, gave each branch of government power to slap the wrist of other branches of government if they tried to overstep their bounds. Today, I want to hone in and focus on two topics that has come up in the news a lot these days, and these have been in the news for years and years. And I want to use these two examples to illustrate what happens when the principles of separation of power and checks and balances are violated. And it's not a pretty picture. So the first one I want to talk about is illegal immigration. Now, this is sticky. I'm not going to get into what's right and what's wrong. I will give my opinion of what I would like to see happen, but I want to talk about how I want to talk about the constitutionality of different things that have happened around illegal immigration. So, number one, who has the power to pass laws regarding naturalization? This is easy, and there's only one answer. It is Congress. They're the only ones that should be passing laws not only about naturalization, but about anything at all. Number two, who is required to enforce the laws that Congress passes? That would be the executive branch. So, you know, the executive branch, Border Patrol, the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, the CIA, these are all federal agencies that fall under the executive branch as the enforcement arm of the laws that Congress passes. The executive branch doesn't get to choose, or shouldn't get to choose, whether it enforces the laws. It shouldn't get to decide which laws to enforce based on the preference of those who elected him. He or she is elected for the sole purpose of enforcing all laws. At least that's how it should be. Now, as I've, in recent years, as I've, you know, I live down south of Tucson, Arizona, where in a neighborhood that is has a whole lot of Border Patrol agents who live there. So in my church and in my community, I've had the chance to talk with a lot of Border Patrol agents. And to a person, right now, they are very frustrated because they fall under the executive branch, under the direction of the president. However, they have been told through executive fiat, through executive order, that they're not supposed to enforce many of the laws that are on the books that Congress has passed. So they find themselves in a very uncomfortable situation. And you can imagine what this must do to the morale, where they have taken an oath to uphold the Constitution, and yet they're being told not to enforce the legislative acts of Congress. They've also been told that they're supposed to follow, because they fall under the executive branch, the president. So obviously, you know, I can't imagine in the next life they're going to be held culpable for that, but they're put in a position where they can't both honor the legislative will and the executive will. And I really feel for these servicemen and women that are put in that terrible, terrible situation. Now, there's a lot going on here. And I'm not even going to try to do a comprehensive review of immigration law here, but I just want to highlight a couple things. Number one, if we go back to the Obama days, there was a program called the Dreamer Program, and this was passed by executive order by President Obama. And basically, the idea here is that there were young children who were brought into the country illegally who have been here for a long time. And so this executive order gave them some protection against criminal prosecution for being here illegally, because they kind of were brought over by parents. It wasn't their decision. And this is their home by, for all intents and purposes. Now, I can sympathize with the desire to create a program like that. However, who is responsible for passing immigration laws? It is not the President of the United States. The words executive order appear nowhere in the Constitution. President Obama did not have constitutionally the authority to create such a thing and require its enforcement, yet he did. And during President Trump's administration, he came under fire when he revoked that executive order. And he went to Congress and said, look, you guys, you know, this executive order, I'm going to get rid of it as of this date. And you have until that time to come up with a comprehensive immigration bill that we can all live with. And Congress sputtered and died and was not able to do that. Now, I know I'm skirting dangerous territory here saying something positive about Trump, but in this case, undoing a law that should not have been passed by a president and requiring Congress, the legislative body, to do something about it was the constitutional move. Now, that being said, Trump is not and was not squeaky clean constitutionally on the immigration story. So he campaigned, and much of his presidency was marked by conversations and debates and lawsuits around the border wall. He kind of came in with the right idea, telling Congress, hey, I want to do this. This is important. We have laws on the books that we need to enforce, and we can't do it without some physical barrier. So give us money to go build this border wall. And because of politicking and people didn't like Trump and his hair and his tweets and everything else, and there was political divide for a whole bunch of other reasons, it didn't pass. He didn't get that money. So instead, he declares a state of emergency and began shuffling money that had been allocated by Congress to other purposes. He took that and redeployed it for a border wall, spent money on something that the Congress had not passed and authorized. It violated the power of the purse. That is also not okay. When you're president of the United States and you don't get your way, that does not mean that you should be able to pass a new law by executive order, which is an authority that you do not have in the Constitution. So I love the case of immigration to illustrate this principle, because it shows very clearly that both political parties and representatives from both political parties have violated their oaths of office to sustain and defend the Constitution of the United States. And it is unconscionable, and it has to stop. I want to pause here for a moment to talk about the rule of law and why it's important, because it kind of plays into the conclusion I want to draw from this set of examples. I want to share a work experience briefly. I used to work for a company and a manufacturing plant in Mexico, just south of the border. And while I was there, I worked in the accounting department, and I saw something troubling. You know, the plant director would tell her team that it was vitally important that we not miss our financial forecast for that month. And we would see things where we would hit the forecast one month and then we would miss it by a ton the month after. What we started realizing was that people were taking that edict from the plant manager and hiding invoices until the next month in order to make the numbers look. And eventually they had to come clean because their vendors had to be paid, and it would all kind of hit at once. I took this to a mentor who worked at the corporate office and was aware of this. Now, we were able to fix this and find these things so that our financial records at the corporate level were still materially accurate, and it worked out. I mean, it was okay, but it still bothered me that this was something we had to deal with. And this mentor explained something that has completely changed the way that I look at these kinds of things. He explained that in the United States of America, we have a very unique way of looking at the law, because we believe in the rule of law, where what the law says is infinitely more important, or should be infinitely more important, than what the ruler says. Whereas most of the world today and throughout history has operated under a paradigm called the rule of the rulers. So under that paradigm, the law or what is right is to do what the ruler says, even if that contradicts the law. Now, we look at it and say, okay, if our ruler says A, but the law says B, the right thing to do is to follow plan B, what the law says. In these other countries, it's the opposite. When you have the law that says one thing and the ruler, the boss, that says something different, then the right thing to do is follow what the boss says, follow what the king says, follow what the ruler says. And number one, that helped me kind of understand that, you know, this is a different culture and they look at things differently. Now, we had to fix that and work on it as an American company that you know, operates under a different set of standards and things like that. But it illustrated a really important point. And you can see the results of those different paradigms as you look at the relative of prosperity of countries that employ these different paradigms. The United States of America for the past couple hundred years has been incredibly stable and predictable because it depends on following first laws that are set by a large group of people. And whereas countries that are yanked back and forth depending on who's in power and what they feel like saying that day and whether or not they're in a good mood or in a bad mood or have a stomach ache or not, that's an incredibly unstable, unpredictable environment to work in. So when you have that kind of instability, you're going to think twice before investing significantly in a home or in a business because the next guy could come in and take it all away or enact their own edicts that completely destroy that. And so you can have these really dramatic swings. And that's why you have Mexico and large swaths of Central and South America that are poverty stricken, despite being some of the most rich places on the globe in terms of natural resources. There is no reason why those countries cannot be incredibly wealthy and prosperous. And the only thing that can explain that is the instability of this rule of the ruler mentality. On the flip side, what that means is when you have the rule of law and you have to go through pretty onerous steps in order to pass a law, and if you're going to change the rules of the game, if you're going to change the constitution, you've got to get 3/4 of the people in the country to agree with it. That makes for very slow change. That's why it took from the founding of the country to the mid-1800s, 70 years for slavery to be abolished. Because you couldn't just have Mr. Abraham Lincoln come in and wave a magic wand and make it all disappear. Although there were presidents that wanted to do that before, it took a long time. So that means progress is slow, but that slow progress means that when we do make a change, it's going to be lasting. It's going to be supported by a vast majority of the people, which means you don't have violent revolutions and uprisings. And it creates for a very stable, predictable environment to operate, grow, and prosper in. Now, if you're in politics and you want to change something, that makes you incredibly frustrated. But the fact that politicians are frustrated by this slow, tedious, arduous process should make all of us ordinary citizens feel very comfortable that we can make plans for the future without having to wonder if in 2 years at the next election, the next guy's going to come in and wipe it all away. Hopefully that makes sense. So in this country that is founded on the rule of law, nobody should be above the law. Nobody. All right, so let's talk about the second main topic found in current events today that I wanted to talk about, and that's congressional budgets. There's a lot in the news right now about passing a budget. We've got a Republican House of Representatives that wants to pass a budget in a certain way, and the Senate, which is not controlled, and the presidency, which are not controlled so much by the Republicans, are kind of saying, nope, we don't like it. We want to do something else. And now there's this looming risk that we're about to run out of money. We need to go borrow more, but there's a debt ceiling in place where Congress previously has agreed we're not going to borrow more than this. But if we don't now, if we don't get a budget, if we aren't able to go raise more money, then certain parts of the federal government has to shut down. Now, some people will think that's a fantastic idea. And in some cases, it might be. There are other people who look at some important services that the government provides and thinks, you know, maybe we shouldn't shut those things down. That is a topic for the political arena and for political debate. But what is not up for debate or shouldn't be up for debate is that the Constitution requires that money spent be allocated through the appropriations process. That means that Congress should decide we're going to spend in total, let's say $1 trillion this year. Not only do they have to agree on the total amount of spending, but they have to agree on exactly how it's going to be spent. This many dollars for the Navy, this much for the Army, this much for Social Security, this much for federal loan programs or whatever the case is. They have to decide on how that money will be allocated or appropriated is the word that they use. What has happened in the past and what has been going on for quite some time is when these crises approach, where we have differing political parties in control of different houses of Congress or differing branches of government, and they can't come to an agreement, they've been passing what are called continuing resolutions, which basically says, look, we're going to agree to raise the debt ceiling, we'll go raise more money, we'll continue spending as we have been while we decide on a budget. So instead of first agreeing on how we're going to raise money, that's taxes, then number two, budgeting how we're going to spend each dollar, and then going out and beginning to spend, they're doing it the other way. They're saying, look, we're going to spend, and we'll figure out later how we're going to spread it apart, is not only unconstitutional, but that's terrible financial practice. I mean, this is budgeting 101 that we taught in our high school class this year. It's completely inappropriate, completely irresponsible to operate that way. Yet that's exactly what has been happening, and it violates the appropriations clause of the U.S. Constitution. So regardless of whether you think the Republicans are being stingy or the Democrats are being crazy spenders, that's a political debate. But what should not be a debate for any of us is that these groups of people who have made an oath on the Bible in the presence of God and all of us as witnesses that they will defend the Constitution of the United States, so help them God. What should not be up for debate is that they need to follow the rules, even if it makes them look unpopular, even if that means they have to come together and compromise. So what's the conclusion that I want to draw from all this? Well, we have a systemic problem in this country with political leaders trying to throw crap at the wall and seeing what sticks, or trying to cram through as much as possible before the courts have a chance to rule on it. So think Trump border wall funding and Biden student loan forgiveness, both of which not constitutional, but they just plowed ahead and waited for the slow judicial process to catch up and slap their hand later after much of the damage had already been done. We, as citizens of this country, as followers of Christ, as followers of God, as people who believe in the importance of oaths, as people who believe in the importance of the rule of law, cannot look the other way when our favorite candidate or our party violates the rule of law or the Constitution just because they're doing something that we like. We cannot violate those foundational principles without driving our country over a cliff in the long run, because that game might work in our favor now, but it will slap us across the face when the shoe's on the other foot and power's in the other party. Personally, I like the idea of a border wall, because a nation without enforceable borders is not really a nation. But on the other hand, I also love the idea of making it easier for the poor and huddled masses of the world to come and find a better life here. Our country was built on immigration. Some of the greatest people, the greatest generation of Americans that built this country into the powerhouse and the most charitable country in the world that it is today, was built on the backs of immigrants. But I also know that there are evil people who will try to take advantage of porous borders to do this country harm. It's not that long ago that 9/11 happened. That is a real risk. And that is also something that is valid and that we should figure out how to do, but we've got to be able to walk and chew gum at the same time. What I do not want is for those preferences of mine to happen and be brought about in a way that violates the supreme law of the land. And I sure as you know what kind of fire don't want it done by the candidate I elected violating their sacred oath of office to honor and defend the Constitution of the United States, so help them God. They will have to stand before God one day and make an accounting of how well or not they upheld that oath. And I would not want to be them when judgment day comes if they spat on their oaths all in the name of re-election or popularity or petty politicking. So what should have happened with the unconstitutional stuff that both parties have done around immigration, or when Biden did the student loan forgiveness thing, or when the Supreme Court rewrote Obamacare? This is something I didn't talk about earlier, but when Obamacare came to the Supreme Court, it had already been implemented. Same kind of a deal. Let's throw it at the wall and see what sticks. There were unconstitutional portions of that law, which the Supreme Court should have shut down and sent back to the Congress to refigure out. Instead, the Supreme Court took over the lawmaking powers of the legislative branch and rewrote Obamacare themselves to slide under the constitutionality bar that they saw. That's wrong. So what should have happened in these instances? Well, in some of these cases, not all, lawsuits were brought and the Supreme Court ruled them unconstitutional, but not before the damage had already been done. With Obamacare, Congress probably should have exercised their impeachment power and removed those judges from office for usurping lawmaking authority, even if those lawmakers liked the results of what the Supreme Court was doing while it usurped legislative power. Again, as a group of people who have laid their hands on the Bible and sworn to defend the Constitution, even if some branch does something that they like, if it isn't in line with the Constitution, they should fight it. That is what men and women of integrity do. But my question is, what do we do about all this when those checks and balances aren't working or when they work too slow? We do that at the ballot box. We are the final check and balance against a government out of control. We are the last line of defense. And if our elected officials will not defend the Constitution, even in cases where their preferences would be met by not defending the Constitution, then you and I have to be good enough and have enough integrity to do just that thing. Every single leader who has tried these types of shenanigans and have violated their oath of office do not deserve our trust, but they deserve our ire and a swift kick out of office at the next election. And unfortunately, that explains the vast majority of our elected officials. It's a long time since we've had a president or even the majority of Congress that are willing to stand up for what's right, even if it's unpopular, even if it doesn't jive with what their political preferences are. Now, you might say, well, maybe they didn't know. Maybe they didn't know that this was a violation of the Constitution, in which case they still shouldn't be in office. If they're that incompetent and don't understand the Constitution that they're making an oath to defend, then they shouldn't be there either. So where are the good ones? Where are leaders who are both capable and honest? Men and women of integrity who will do what is right, what is lawful, and what is constitutional, that will try to follow the rule of law for political wins rather than going around the Constitution. I just don't think we pick those guys. We pick the ones who tell us what we want to hear, regardless of whether it's legal, constitutional, or not. We have got to demand righteousness and reward it at the ballot box and punish wickedness first and foremost before anything else. We must choose righteous rulers. When the time comes that we choose wickedness, and I would contend that we have been doing that for a long time, then we are ripe for destruction. If you want to talk about why our country is in the mess that it is, why we're teetering on the brink of financial ruin, why we're divided and at each other's throats, It's not because of one party or the other. It is because we have chosen wickedness for so long that we are ripe for destruction. And we have to ask ourselves, are we going to continue doing that? Or are we going to decide to do something different? Are we finally going to decide to wake up and choose what is right and true, no matter what the costs are?
Thank you for listening to Abide in Liberty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes and share this with friends and family. In the meantime, keep up with the show online at abideinliberty.com. Also, if you'd like to help our K-12 bless and educate more families, contact us by visiting libertyyouthacademy.org. Until next time, be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, and be strong.